It's our pleasure to once again have Pro Assurance Corporation presenting before the New York Society. As many of you will remember from prior presentations, this is one of the leading writers of medical malpractice or professional liability insurance in the country. We've always had a very favorable opinion of the company and the management team, and really view their position as the blue chip leader within the industry. Representatives from the company include today Mr. Vic Adamo, who's the Vice Chairman, President, and Chief Operating Officer. We have Ned Rand, who's the Chief Financial Officer. And then we have our beloved investor relations individual, Mr. Frank O'Neill. So without any delay, let's have the presentation begin.
Thank you, Greg, and we're very pleased to be here today. Pro Assurance is the nation's fourth largest carrier of medical malpractice insurance. Actually, when we look at the physician market, which is our core market, we're the second largest. We have over 31,000 physicians, 36,500 policyholders, and we are diversified across the eastern half of the United States, as we'll talk about more in a moment here. We are A-minus rated by three rating agencies, which distinguishes us, and we look at the business as we do as a medical malpractice specialist. That's all we do. We focus on medical malpractice for the long term, and you'll hear that theme in the remainder of our presentation. We are 2 weeks from earning announcements for the year, so that we're not going to dwell on 2006 in the presentation. Ned Rand, our Chief Financial Officer, will give you some number orientation. But the bulk of it's going to focus on how we look at the long term of our business and how we look at the current market as we apply the long term to it. In our organization, we're a long tail insurance organization. We look at our business over the long term. The chart you have before you showing the return to shareholders since inception is the one we're the proudest of. Over cycles in our business, and it is cyclical, we've been able to grow our book value compound average 15.6% per year and have a 16% annualized stock return. Again, in a business, all insurance is cyclical. Medical malpractice may be a little more pronounced in the cycles. And we look at this as we have losses that develop over 3 to 6 years on average. We don't look at the business on a year-to-year basis. We look at it over these time horizons. And on that basis, we believe we've done a very good job for our policyholders and notably for our shareholders. As you know from most lines of insurance now, there is a downturn or a leveling off of frequency and certainly benign severity. As a result of that, there is a great deal of optimism in the boardrooms across the insurance industry and particularly in medical malpractice. Some of this comes about by conditions in the marketplace we'll talk about in the next slide. And as a result of that, pricing is definitely softening. One of the interesting things, though, there have been no new market entrants into the market, so that's very good from the position of those of us that are competing in the market, and terms and conditions are holding. We look at our pricing and our targeted returns, and to the extent possible, we do not endeavor to get involved in the market competition of price. Obviously, you can't ignore the marketplace entirely, and you have to focus on your profitable business. But we've been very pleased that our retention ratios are remaining up in the mid-80s, and we're selling from strength. We're selling on our balance sheet. We're selling from our defense of non-meritorious claims, which distinguishes us from competitors. We're selling on our risk management expertise, and actually we're putting additional money into it, even in this point in the cycle. And we're selling on our physician connections. We have physician committees in a number of states, which you'll see. And we, although we're a New York Stock Exchange company and the largest of these types of carriers, are the ones that maintain our roots and our heritage, being close to the physicians. And we feel that these are very much our differentiating factors. Why is frequency moderating? I mean, this is the big question that we're all facing in the industry. Are lawsuits becoming more targeted as legal costs increase? It is much more expensive for a plaintiff attorney to bring a medical malpractice claim. Was 2006 a down year since there had been a number of tort reform efforts in various states? And just before tort reform, there's a flood of claims come in, then they level off for a few years after that. Is there an increase in patient safety, or is it just part of the cycle? we don't actually have an answer for all these, and we have a variety of theories. But the important point is that we look at it, again, from the longer term. And although there's certainly a good point in the industry now, our long-term focus tells us that it will probably reverse itself, and we'll see an uptick again in the years ahead. So as we conduct our business today, we are not just pricing to where we see the business today. We're pricing for the long term, pricing to retain our margins. And if it results in giving up a bit of top line, that's the price we feel we have to pay for our shareholders and our policyholders. We're also seeing an interesting phenomenon as the frequency goes down. There has been an increase in what we call shock losses. They're really not coming through in the primary limits actuarial data, the million-dollar limits, but we're seeing a number of higher losses for in our own business and our competitors in a number of states. So, again, the trend's too early to predict on this, but we're very cautious as we look at this. Is there a change in the business coming about? The answers very much differ by state, and they very much differ by locality and state. At ProAssurance, we are fortunate to have a great deal of geographical diversification across our footprint. So although we have many states that are very important to us, we don't depend entirely on one or two states. And we're able to moderate our deployment of capital, moderate our efforts to states that in the long run can produce the most profit for the organization. We do concentrate on shareholder value. We concentrate on growing our book value. This last year, we're going to have almost an $8 increase in share value. This is through the third quarter. A good deal of this comes about from the sale of our personal lines operation, MIMIC, but we also have strong core earnings this year. We, again, focus on our long-term position to be a market leader, our balance sheet, and looking for the strength in the next turn of the market. We've also been the leader in M&A activity in this market space. So having a strong balance sheet allows us to be very competitive when market M&A opportunities come up. In the last 2 years, as you probably know if you follow us, we've acquired two organizations, merged them into us very successfully. We've established a Mid-Atlantic hub in the old NICRIC organization and now the upper Midwest through PIC Wisconsin. As a result of those transactions in our organic business, we're now the market leader in Alabama, Delaware, the District of Columbia, Ohio, and West Virginia, and have a top five market position in the light blue states that you see on the graphic. Overall, in our footprint, we are the largest writer of medical malpractice insurance, and that allows us to work from a position of strength in our footprint. Our focus as an organization since 2001 has been to build a national scale in terms of the financial dynamics of the organization, but to remain very localized in our operations. You'll see now that we have the pluses and dots reflect our offices. The pluses are underwriting and claims offices, and the dots are claims-only offices. But we have offices throughout our footprint. We are especially keen on staying very close to the customers from the marketing end and also from the claims management end. We deal in a business where medicine is very localized, where the practice of law and the tort environment is very localized. This is not mid-market commercial insurance. You have to be close to your insureds, and we do that through our localized offices, but yet we can bring a national size balance sheet to bear on this and allow us to get the benefits of that in our economics and our backroom operations. We believe in all lines of business, especially long-tail insurance, that experience is the best teacher. And we as a management have managed through several cycles. And as you listen through the conference calls, you'll probably hear a little more caution from ProAssurance than from some of the other organizations. And, you know, time will tell who ends up being right in this. But we have been through the market cycle since 1975 when medical malpractice insurance essentially came onto the scene. We have management average tenure of 16 years with the organization and 21 years in the industry. And we have a substantial ownership position in the organization. Our chairman, Dr. Darrell Crowe, and the rest of us collectively own about 10% of the company. And we have share ownership guidelines that go down to the vice president level, which is middle management. And I can tell you when we are fortunate enough to get a bonus, that bonus also comes in stock of the company. So we try to incent everyone in the organization to be an owner of the organization as well as a manager or employee of the organization. We talked a little bit about physician involvement, and it's a very much a differentiator for us. It differentiates us from the commercial carriers out there who don't have the ties with the physicians, and it also makes us very competitive with the smaller state mutuals that are still connected to their medical societies. Clearly, we have, in my experience in the business, which again goes back to the 1980, we have the most level of physician involvement of any organization out there, including the ones that claim their physician mutuals. We have claims and underwriting committees in 16 states. Those are groups of local doctors that get together four times a year to go over claims, to advise us on the claims environment, to advise us on the underwriting environment. We meet with them. Our senior management goes out and they participate in those meetings. They also create physicians who are willing to talk to their fellow physicians about the values of being a pro-assurance insured. We usually are not at the lowest price points in our market, so we're selling our relationships and we're selling our claims defense. And we use these other physicians to help us do that on a word-of-mouth basis. In addition to that, we have what we call regional advisory boards, which are maybe a somewhat more marketing-oriented. They don't actually advise us on claims, but we get together constantly out there in our market area, meeting with doctors, taking them to dinner, talking about the company's philosophy, and getting their input on more generic matters. We have our risk management seminars, as we do. We have two hubs of our risk management, one in the north, one in the south, and allows us, again, to get very close to our customers. You've heard a lot from other insurance companies, I'm sure, about disciplined underwriting, and we have to reflect the loss history. This is the way we operate. We're going to tell you right now that 2007 will be a very challenging top-line year. We've been able to keep our top line up through the M&A activities, which is part of what we do. By bringing companies into our organization, we've been able to maintain the top line. Our focus is maintaining our margins, and if we have to give up some level of business to do that, that's the price we have to pay. But we are keen on, devoted to, our underwriters are told over and over that the margins in our business are what we're looking for to keep those up. There are no incentives in the organization based totally on market without the combined ratio impact of that. Our folks are incented on the combined ratio. Now, obviously, over time, we need to grow that top line, but in this phase of the market, our focus is maintaining our profitability. We've also, because of our financial size and strength, been able to better our reinsurance position. We essentially cede off business over $1 million to the reinsurers. From a financial statement point of view, we're not that leveraged from a reinsurance point of view, but it allows us to provide limits excess of $1 million that we wouldn't otherwise provide. We've decided this year to take participation in the treaties ourselves to increase our net retained. As our balance sheet has grown, we really wanted to maintain the same dynamics of our treaty, but increase our net, and we're doing that by participating alongside the reinsurers at both the first layer of our reinsurance, which goes up to $5 million, and the excess layer, which is 11 excess of $5 million. If you've studied ProAssurance, if you've heard our presentations, you know that we consider claims defense and claims management our core strength, our long-term competitive advantage. We are very aggressive in the defense of claims that we feel are medically defensible. You can see on the chart before you that in 2006, we have taken over 675 claims of insureds to a full jury trial. That's an incredible number. As you compare it to some of our other companies out there in the environment, you'll see that that is an amazing number of claims. On a daily basis, we have two or three juries out throughout the organization. We're able to do that because we remain very localized on claims management, because we have people out there in the field that can manage those claims, along with our senior staff in Birmingham, to get good results in our claims philosophy. In pure numbers terms, as a result of our claims philosophy, both the dropped or dismissed claims and the successful verdicts on behalf of our insureds, we have a favorable outcome rate of 85.1. Industry average, this is data from 2004, we don't have the composite from later dates, but it's 76.4. So you're looking at essentially a 10-point betterment over the industry in favorable outcomes of claims because of our aggressive claims philosophy. You can see that how that philosophy comes about by looking at the next graphic. On average, the industry spends of its loss adjustment dollars, of its loss adjustment expenses, it will spend two-thirds of the dollars on indemnity and one-third on the actual expense component. At ProAssurance, it's the opposite. We spend over 50% of our dollars on the loss adjustment component and less than half on indemnities. As you can see, on an industry average over time, it's given us a better loss ratio and, again, a better competitive advantage with our customers who value this. physicians want to be defended. They don't want to be reported to the National Practitioners Data Bank. They value the way in which we go about handling their claims, and by and large are willing to provide us with the premium margin that we feel is necessary to successfully sell our product. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Ned Rand to give you the financial overview.
Thank you, Vic. As Vic mentioned, it's going to be a few weeks yet before we report earnings. So I thought I'd take the time we've got today just to look back at what we've done over the last 5 years, really looking back from the merger of Medical Assurance and Professionals Group that took place in 2001. And so starting from that point, as a beginning point, we have created more than $1 billion in shareholder value. What's really driven that has been our increase in book value per share, and that's a primary focus for the organization is growing book value per share. We've grown that from just over $16 in 2001 to over $32 through 9 months of 2006. That equates to a 16% compound annual growth rate in our book value per share. Over that same period of time, our stock has grown in excess of 20% per year, going from $17 to somewhere in the $50 to $51 range. As Vic mentioned, we're a long-tailed line of business, and really for success in this industry, in particular in MedMal, you've got to keep a focus on the long term. We think that's really critical to long-term success in this, and I think our results bear that out. Another key metric that we use to monitor the organization, to measure our success, is return on equity. And it's probably been the most challenging objective for us over the period of the acquisition. We price our policies to return a 12 to 14% ROE, and embedded in that pricing is an assumption of a 1-to-1 premium to surplus ratio. Over time, that should equate to a comparable return for our shareholders. That's certainly what we strive for. And through the first 9 months of 2006, we've achieved that objective. And by a lot of measures, are considered overcapitalized. Perhaps the rating agencies don't think so, but I think everyone else does. And as we look at our capital structure, just point out a few things about it. We do have some leverage on the balance sheet, amount of leverage that we're very comfortable with, right at about 17% debt to equity. And the leverage that we do have is made up in two components. We've got some convertible debt that is callable in 2008. It's convertible into about 2.6 million shares of stock. And the conversion feature is triggered by the performance of our stock in the 30 days preceding each calendar quarter end. And as of right now, based on the stock performance of our stock in the last 30 days of the year, the debt is currently convertible. We also have several tranches of surplus notes and trust preferred securities. These are both securities that ProAssurance entered into, as well as debt that we've acquired in both the PIC Wisconsin and NCRIC transactions. That debt is callable by us starting in 2007, but principally in 2009. In addition to growing our capital base, we have been growing our invested assets, and that's been on the back of extremely strong cash flows. The yellow bars on this chart represent each annual cash flow from operations. The green bars are the cumulative. And since the merger of Mutual Assurance and ProNational, cash flow generated from our insurance operations has been $1.3 billion. In addition to that, we had the sale of MIMIC in the first quarter of this year, which added $350 million to our invested assets. I should point out that 2006, if you take a look at what we have up here, $236 million, and compare that to what we're reporting in our financial statements, you'll see that this number is about $100 million higher. I've taken the liberty to add back a couple of items that I think artificially deflate cash flow from this year. As a part of our investment philosophy, and we're going to talk about that in a second, we have some securities that we hold as trading securities, and we increased our allocation to trading securities this year by about $50 million. The accounting rules stipulate that activity in trading portfolio investments either adds to or takes away from operating cash flow. So that $50 million increase in our trading portfolio, even though those funds are coming out of other investments, is a reduction of $50 million to our operating cash flow. In addition, we have the taxes that we paid on the MIMIC transaction. We paid about $50 million on the MIMIC transaction. That comes out of operating cash flow. The $350 million net proceeds that we received from the transaction show up under investing activity in our cash flow statement. So taking a little bit of time to look at our investment portfolio, we take a lot of risk on the liability side of our balance sheet, tend to take a pretty conservative approach to our asset side. So we have a investment portfolio that is largely comprised of fixed income securities and cash. But we also do have a variety of other investments where we seek to find non-correlating risks. And in addition to the fixed income portfolio, we have an equity portfolio. We have a business-owned life insurance portfolio. We have a TIPS portfolio, high-yield debt, as well as a number of limited partnerships that we invest in. Also note that we're holding a good bit of cash, 7% of our portfolio in cash. That's high for us. Given the flatness of the yield curve and the narrowness of credit spreads, we're very comfortable with that level of cash at the current time. The growth in the investment portfolio has really made investment income become a factor again in our operations. Through the 9 months of the year, you can see that it's now up to 26%. For every dollar premium we earn, we're earning 26 cents of investment income. So investment income is really becoming a driver for earnings for us and looks to be into the future. So where does that leave us? We believe that we have the elements for long-term success in this business. Our past success is borne out in our numbers. We have a well-diversified book of business and a platform that can accommodate both organic growth and growth through mergers and acquisition. And I think most importantly, we have a management team in place that has both the experience and the discipline necessary to execute that strategy. And with that, I think we'd be happy to open the floor up to questions.
You had just mentioned in passing the business-owned life insurance portfolio. Is that a significant part of the investment portfolio? And is that general account or separate account policies?
The question is about our business-owned life insurance, the size of that portfolio, and then the nature of it. It is not a significant investment. It's in the $50 to $60 million range, and it currently is all general account funds. It's with four or five life companies.
Hi. Has medical protective, I imagine, is a competitor?
Yes.
How have they changed as a long-term competitor, and how has the business environment changed since Berkshire took them over?
Since Berkshire Hathaway took them over. I think it's fair to say that they're becoming more stable under General Electric. It was, I think, difficult for them from what we saw in the marketplace to get a lot of the basics done. They're stabilizing somewhat, and they're looking to be more aggressive in the marketplace. We're seeing some price-driven efforts by them. So far, it has not had a significant impact on our book of business in competitive states, and we overlap with them quite a bit. Again, we continue to sell based on our doctor roots in our claims management, and their orientation is somewhat different. So certainly they're an important competitive force out there in the market, but as of today, the dynamics of the market have not changed significantly.
Are you projecting any changes? Does their war chest change anything? And are they known as conservative compared to you?
Certainly they're more aggressive on our marketing folks tell us, and again, we depend upon the input we get at the local level. They're somewhat more aggressive on the pricing side than we are. And certainly they have a very large war chest, but I don't think anybody wants to spend a war chest of underpriced business. So I'm sure from their point of view, they're looking to how they can price properly. They're just probably seeing the market somewhat more optimistically than we are now. I'm sorry. Go ahead, sir.
Physicians to technologically advance their practices while there's a demand more on by patients' attentions for like more hand-holding and that kind of thing. So the personal element, right, seems to be under a great deal of stress. And I've noticed that the pharmaceutical companies are marketing now not only directly to patients, but, I mean, we've seen or been reading about where they are very proactive about encouraging physicians to use their products and things like this. So, I mean, of the number of big, granted, there are pharmaceutical lawsuits on how they've experimented on people, but do you see some kind of effect on the trend in, aside from your firm, but just for this nature of insurance going forward, you know, where you've got this dynamic of patients sort of being a number and physicians have to technologically advance with sophisticated technology and the pharmaceutical companies looking at shooting fish in the barrel?
Let me try giving an answer. The question is about the dynamics of the marketplace, technology, pharmaceutical companies. It is a very challenging time to be a physician, especially a physician who's been in practice for a number of years, because technology is changing very rapidly. And medical malpractice is, by definition, a deviation from the standard of care. That's what an average physician of similar training and experience would provide. So if the average physician is doing something technologically advanced and you're not, you can find yourself certainly in a problem over that. And the drug companies are advertising to the public, and that certainly causes pressure at the physician office level. Well, if you give me this drug, won't I get better, that sort of thing. And physicians are having to manage that. We spend a great deal, to get back to your general question in a second, but we spend a great deal of our risk management time going over those issues with the doctors, trying to make sure that as we go out and do office assessments that they are keeping up with the relevant technology, although it's their responsibility to do that, not ours, but we try to advise them as much as we can and talk about these other influences. It is a challenge in the medical profession. In terms of the data coming through, the losses that relate to drugs have so far in the history of this business really become drug company losses rather than practitioner losses. If physicians are prescribing according to the proper guidelines and doing those types of things, a deficiency or a problem that emerges in a drug, generally speaking, becomes an issue for the drug company rather than the physicians per se. There have been a number of academic studies talking about the relationship between time spent with patients, those types of things on medical malpractice, communications. Again, from a company risk management point of view, a great deal of our focus is really spent on patient communications. We don't go out there and try to tell doctors how, we don't try to substitute for their specialty societies that look at the actual hands-on application of medicine, but we talk about the patient interaction and some of the global trends that you're talking about. So I guess the short answer to it all is that they are all factors in the involving medical malpractice scene.
In terms of your acquisition focus strategy, what are your size constraints, and do we have any geographic considerations? And when looking at size, could you discuss the financial flexibility of the organization in terms of how these acquisitions might be financed?
Sure. Let me try that, then Ned can add in. Size constraint in 2001, when the two parts of our organization got together, it was essentially a doubling of either side of the organization. So I guess the outer bounds that we've done is our equal size and getting that much larger. In terms of the comfortable size to absorb, the last two transactions have been very comfortable. They've been in the $100 million range. They've really fit what we were doing. They plugged into a region. Again, NCRIC in the District of Columbia, Mid-Atlantic area, PIC Wisconsin, the upper Midwest. They were companies that came out of the same background and heritage, physician companies. They delivered the business generally the way we do, not exactly, but generally the way we do. And they're back, and then we were able to consolidate the back rooms into our Birmingham operation. In terms of economic constraints, we've had the benefit of having a good currency in our stock. The last two transactions actually were stock-based transactions, although we'd be equally open to doing a cash transaction in the right circumstances.
I'm not sure that there's a lot to add beyond the fact that we do have some excess capital right now that certainly could be used toward acquisitions, and our balance sheet is certainly not over-leveraged. So that if we were to want to do a sizable transaction with all cash, we certainly have the capabilities of doing it.
Just let me add one other thought. From our point of view, again, the reason that M&A transactions are beneficial is medical malpractice insurance is a very dear commodity to doctors. They spend a lot of money for it, but they also develop loyalty to the carriers, and we have much loyalty to us. And to dislodge that loyalty on a pricing basis really takes some pretty deep discounting. By going in and doing an M&A transaction, we're able to
acquire that loyalty along with the knowledge of the staff, the books and records of the organization, the actuarial experience, which is very different on a state basis. So that's been really our preferred mode of expansion, although, as you saw from the other charts, we do grow on an organic basis in, within our footprint and on, in the adjoining states.
I think we got one last question here.
Sir.
Is the trend toward RRGs and captives much ado about nothing, or is it meaningful? How has it affected you, if at all?
In the hard market right after 2001, the next couple of years, there were a large number started, but collectively, I think they add up to, at least last time I saw data, collectively they added up to about $200 million of premium over a $10 billion industry. So they focus primarily in areas like Pennsylvania, which had really serious availability problems, and some single specialty ones. Which was very difficult to get insurance, say, bariatric surgeons, although I personally wouldn't want that as my only risk pool, but they've chosen to go that direction. So they've been, you know, a factor out there, but really they become a major factor only if the longer-term players react to them, and so far there hasn't been that much reaction to them. So while they're, I think, a factor out there in the market, they have not overall changed the dynamics of the marketplace.
Thank you.